You'll get our NBA Finals thoughts. Some ideas on free agency, even if we don't have the names yet. Plus, a look at ownership in the Northwest Division and how that could impact the Nuggets. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer at the Action Network. Joined by my co-host, Adam Mares. Still looking tan, still looking wonderful, even though it rained on him all week. Still looking wonderful. We are here with you to discuss any number of things, including today we'll talk about the NBA Finals, our thoughts on that series and how it pertains to Denver. We'll talk a little bit about NBA ownership, as we could have some new teams in the Northwest Division in terms of who's running those teams and what the impact is. Obviously, the Wolves have been kind of a big impact. We will dive in the third segment a little bit into free agency, and we'll have a little bit of a discussion on what the Nuggets targets are going to be, some ideas, some general ideas, nothing too solid, but more of like the framework of where the Nuggets look to be going in free agency. Before we get started, I do want to urge you to go check out Locked On Avalanche, because your Colorado Avalanche are going to the Stanley Cup final. She's so excited. Oh my, she's just like losing her mind. She's in the Tetons right now. I have the house to myself. But she's just like going absolutely bonkers. I went to Western Conference Finals game one. Avs played great, got that game three. That was really the pivotal one. And once that happened, they were able to just, you know, take over. Kel McCarr, fantastic game four. Just this Avalanche team is on the verge of returning as a champion. And that is very exciting. I can say that because she's not listening. If I said that, she'd be like, don't you talk about that. She's very, very superstitious. Go check out Locked On Avalanche. It's a great show. You'll enjoy it. My wife listens to it every day. She actually listens to that show every day. Not this one. not this one, but that one she enjoys. Adam Morris, the NBA Finals continue to roll on. We are recording on Wednesday morning. NBA Finals Game 3 tonight between the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. I'm excited to get your thoughts on what you've seen from this series and what your big takeaways are, because I often think that the finals are a great window into, okay, if you want to compete at that level, you know, obviously you need talent. That's the number one thing. You need talent. But I have a lot of thoughts in terms of where the league still kind of remains and how teams have to be considering that as they build their championship teams. So what are your thoughts on the NBA Finals in brief?
You're 100% correct in that. That's exactly what I think about every single year, is like the teams that make it to the finals demonstrate what it takes. Like, where's the league going? You really see the trends. For example, the Phoenix Suns, I thought they might be a trend. They bounce out of the playoffs in the way that they do. And you realize, oh, there was a different trend actually from the season that we had to learn. And maybe what they had, not that it was fool's gold, but that it was flawed in some way that prevented them from reaching the finals. Maybe that way was luck. Maybe it was matchup, whatever. But
maybe it was COVID, as the Athletic reported this morning, that there was a larger outbreak than was initially reported, as several players, quote, did not feel well before game seven and yet did not self-report to get tested. Great job. Great job by everybody with these protocols and with adhering to them. Anyway, go ahead.
Pardon me also. I mean, you're 1,000% right, and we don't have to get into the weeds into this, but look, man, you're in the conference, like you're Chris Paul and you're in a conference finals, and all of a sudden you have a little bit of a runny nose. Like that's a tough spot to be in for all of those guys. A really tough spot, but, they ended up, what, didn't they lose by 50 points anyway? I mean, kind of, yeah, maybe makes a little bit more sense. The thing though, this has been a trend for several years, but I think this is the greatest example of it, especially in my opinion, the Golden State Warriors. You have to be able to win a lot of different ways. You just have to be able to. And that's not like the Warriors win with Steph Curry and they win with Draymond Green and they win sometimes with Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson. Like those things haven't changed. But their ability to say in this series, this role player becomes more important, and in this one does, and to be able to kind of change your look, it's just so important. And I thought game two was the best example of this, with the return of a Gary Payton II and just sort of the impact and the way he allowed Golden State to adjust to what Boston does well and what they did well in game one. To me, it just, it's so interesting because Denver, to me, that's the story of Denver is, can they get to a point where they can solve the most problems that they might run into in a playoffs?
Yeah, and I'm sorting through a lot of thoughts on this. I'm going to write a column at the end of the finals because both of these teams have a little bit of symmetry between them, the Celtics and the Warriors. You know, it's very easy to be like, I think it's very easy to look at these two teams and go, hey, neither one of them have like a marquee center. Like they're all built on the perimeter.
Right.
I also think it's very easy to dismiss that and be like, well, look, Joel Embiid got a broken face and Jokic was without two starters and, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is on the Wolves. And so like all these things are kind of, you can dismiss them. I do think that there's probably something to the idea of if you're going to do it, if you're going to make a run with a center as your marquee stable icon thing, you're probably going to have, and you've been talking about this, but you've been talking about it differently in terms of like what the Nuggets need. Like you've talked a lot about like, look, the offense is going to be so good with Jokic anyway, right? That you've got to have like top end defenders and you can make it work. What I think I am kind of approaching is the idea of if you are not going to be able to switch with your starting unit, if you're not going to be able to play small, if that's like off the table for you, the rest of those other four guys are going to have to be high level defenders. I think Jamal's high enough. I don't think MBJ is. The other four guys, I think, are going to have to be like not good, but great defenders to make it work. Like the Celtics actually play Robert Williams a ton and they use drop a ton. They did that versus the Heat. Like I thought that was going to be a switch heavy series and it wasn't because they decided like we can let them shoot a little bit. Like that was where Boston got to. It was like we can let them shoot a little bit. Not like easy stuff, like still make it hard on them. But we can pull back. When Marcus Smart's like famous thing in the finals talking about like this isn't the Heat, it wasn't an insult. It was, but it wasn't like a purposeful insult towards Miami of like those guys are garbage. It was a purposeful thing of we needed to protect the rim more because they have an even balanced score between jumpers and rim, and they're more dangerous at the rim. Like we'll live a little bit more with a few jumpers. So there's still ways that you can do all these things. But I do firmly believe that if you're going to have this, what you have to do is you are going to have exceptional wing defenders, not good. Like I'm actually at the point I've like completely gone to your side. Our path on offense defense over the last 5 years makes me dizzy, but I am like in lockstep with you on these guys have got to be defenders. Honestly, first, like the spacing is less important than what you're going to have on the defensive wing. You have to have spacing. Can't be terrible. Can't be non-shooters. But that defense, I think, is going to have to be priority one. Watching the way these two teams defend and watching how much they use switch. And even then, like a good example of this is like when the Celtics go small, like Curry was attacking Horford over and over and over again in game two. Like that's going to be a big adjustment tonight in game three is either Horford's going to have to do a better job or the Celtics are going to have to bring help to try and avoid Horford getting in those pick and rolls. And that's Al Horford, a very good, even in his age, perimeter defender.
I mean, there's no question that Denver needs like some elite perimeter containment and length, so collectively the length of it. But here's the thing where I think we can overcorrect, because as much as I think it's absolutely true, and I think the Nuggets know this is true, by the way, when we get to segment three and talk about who they need, I think the Nuggets can very easily identify what it is they're looking for. Like they can cull their list down to a very small group of people and then target those ones. But here's the thing. The Denver Nuggets had a 121.9 defensive rating against the Golden State Warriors. And by the way, that includes the first two games where Jordan Poole shot 90% from the three-point line. We have the Dallas Mavericks have a defensive rating against Golden State of 120.3. The Boston Celtics, a 113, which isn't good, but you have to remember that factors in a two fourth quarters, one of which they held them to, what, 13 points, and another of which was all garbage time for all 12 minutes where there was just a run-the-clock-out situation. If you cut out that fourth quarter, it's right in line, like 117, 118 or something. My point is, yes, it is important to be a good defensive team. I don't think Denver will ever be as good defensively as Boston is this year, They're so versatile. They have so many good defenders. They got so many places. They don't. So if we say the upside is a 118 defensive rating against these great teams and Denver's at a 122, part of me thinks, yes, they have to get better. It is important. We can't just discount the idea of like, oh, if we cut out the fourth quarter where they know like that fourth quarter matters. You have to be able to have, sometimes you just have to be able to have one good defensive quarter. And I'm not sure Denver has the ability to have one good defensive quarter four times in a series against the best offenses. So they have to get to that point. But I still think there's something to win. You're going to have to outgun in today's NBA with the way the rules are and the way guys can shoot and the way you can't breathe in on anybody outside of the paint. I still think you're going to have to be able to outgun these teams. So I don't think you can overcorrect if you're Denver and try to swing too hard the other direction. You just have to improve as best you can and be able to break the teams who, by the way, I think are vulnerable. Like Golden State, as great as they are defensively, they're vulnerable to being broken to where they just look like every other defense if you have the right people to exploit that.
I will say like a 113 is fine. Like, I think that's okay. It's one of the reasons I feel pretty good about Boston in this series. They've actually held Golden State to a 98 offensive rating in the half court versus a 100 for the Warriors in the rest of the playoffs. That is, I think, a good indicator. A lot of this is about, can you take away the margin for error? That to me is like, I think the goal here is like, are your defenders, we're not talking about like, can your defenders guard pick and roll? Can your defenders, like, it's less, you can do those things with scheme, but it's like on, can you have fewer breakdowns to lessen the Warriors or the Suns or whoever, their margin for error, make it to where like they have to execute great in order to beat, because you have enough wing defenders that can shoot. And I do think you're right. You have to outgun them. But I, at this point, I think with Jamal, I think with Murray, Jokic, Gordon, you have enough there. With Gordon's ability to cut, I think you have enough to threaten them. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about ownership and about the changing face of the NBA after the Broncos announced new ownership. There's lots to talk about with ownership, as we can have been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the importance of it. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I want to tell you about Sakara. You know, feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it. With delicious, plant-rich transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body, true radiance starts on your plate. Made with high-quality organic ingredients, Sakara's plant-rich transformational nutrition programs are expertly designed to deliver real results, from reduced bloat and ease digestion to clear skin and boosted energy and moods. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/lockedon20. Adam, you took a little visit to Effortless Rehab, and I'd love to hear about it.
So I'm excited because a couple weeks ago, we started telling you about Effortless Rehab and Dr. Weisfeld, who is a, by the way, a big diehard Denver Nuggets fan and a diehard Locked On Nuggets fan, which we really appreciate. And he let me go through his process here of rehabbing from injuries. So it's no accident. This is the ad copy here. It's no accident for 23 years, Utah Jazz players had half the number of injuries as other teams. Hall of Famers John Stockton, Karl Malone were the two least injured players over the last 40 years. And at age 39, Karl Malone averaged 20 points per 36 minutes playing 81 games. How did they do it? They employed a doctor who used a method called AMIT, which has been used by people like Bill Romanowski. You guys know him, but Peekaboo Street, you guys remember. Here's how it works. There's all these different muscle groups that you have that when you have a traumatic injury, some of them can have a tendency to turn off. I know this firsthand because back 5-6 years ago, I had a partial tear of my quadricep tendon. And ever since then, the muscle in my quadricep, like one group of them, just hasn't worked. I did rehab. I did like stairs. I do all these different things. I learned to walk differently. I run, I jump. Everything I do is different. And as a result, my left leg had been so much tinier than my right one, no matter what I do. So I went to doctor. This is why Dr. Weisfeld, he had heard about this. And he's like, why don't you come in and I'll give you an opportunity, where he goes through what I will describe personally as a very weird process. It's almost like a chiropractic mixed with acupuncture, this really weird thing where he kind of does some different stretches, some different resistance pulls. He has a couple different instruments where he'll kind of like massage the muscle and do different things. Have you kind of do different pushes and pulls. And over the course, this took like 2 hours. Over the course of that afterwards, I went from, there's certain things I can't do, like a one-legged squat on my left leg, going downstairs and putting all the weight on one leg. 5-6 years after the injury, I still couldn't do these. I go through the process with him, and at the end of it, I could actually do a one-legged squat about 3/4 the way down, which is something I swear to God I have not done for 5-6 years. So I was really impressed with the process and really impressed with everything. If you have an injury, or if you have some muscles that this kind of makes sense to you, muscle groups that have maybe turned off and you realize, hey, I'm not using these, there's a really good Dr. Weisfeld has that specialty, an AMIT treatment, and he charges just $70 per joint area to do a basic reboot on all the muscles in one joint. Special try it out price for Locked On Nuggets listeners, just $35 for one area. Go to effortlessrehab.com/appointments to make an appointment, or call 303-300-3933. Again, that's Dr. Weisfeld. He's a listener. He's a Denver Nuggets fan. So while you're doing the process, you can sit and talk Nuggets. Just $35 for one area, effortlessrehab.com/appointments, or call 303-300-3933.
We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Really appreciate you tuning in, joining us on the live stream on YouTube, which you can do by following us on our YouTube page, which we really appreciate. Want to let you know that we're doing a listener survey. We got an important favor to ask you. We put together a survey so you can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcast even better. It's your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On podcast. Go to, please don't just put Matt. Don't do that. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Take our audience survey at lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thanks for your help. So Adam Mares, this morning, the Denver Broncos, not the Nuggets, the Broncos sold for $4.5 billion. So, you know, congrats to the Bolin family on having more billions to their name. New ownership comes in. And that kind of echoes, we're seeing like this, it happens, there's cycles, right? The Portland Trailblazers are reportedly in talks. Phil Knight from Nike is in talks, along with a developer from LA, to buy the Portland Trailblazers. Obviously, A-Rod and his partner have an investment in the Minnesota Timberwolves as they transition. That's a long-term investment transition. You know, I'm not expecting Clay Bennett to sell the Oklahoma City Thunder anytime soon, but we are seeing some new faces in terms of the Northwest Division. And I think we're going to see more in the Western Conference. Like, I think there's a lot of expectation that Robert Sarver is probably not going to be the Suns owner, given the ongoing investigation there. There's just like a lot of speculation that Sarver will not be the owner of the Suns long term. Peter Holt in San Antonio, that family plans to keep them there, but there's always kind of like an idea when a matriarch or a patriarch rather transitions that they could wind up being moved. So I guess my big question for you is, like, my takeaway is probably whenever ownership comes in, new ownership always is aggressive. They're always aggressive. Like, they're very excited to home this new thing. It's a new toy, and they want to like push
your
the boundaries.
On, put your stamp on.
They want to push the boundaries on the basketball side, on the business side, on everything. We saw this like with Vivek out in Sacramento. So I think it's probably likely that we're going to see a little bit of, I think we're seeing this with Utah as well with Ryan Smith. Like, there's big changes coming to Utah. Like, Utah is going to be drastically different next year, for better or worse. They're going to be a lot different. I think
they're even a different color, Matt.
I know.
They're neon yellow now. What the heck is going on? I would be so mad, by the way. I know this is an aside. I'd be so mad if I was a Utah Jazz fan. Like, when you make little subtle changes, okay, I get it. Royal blue to navy, navy to royal, whatever. When you go to like, hey, we're just neon yellow now. That's a bold decision. Also, especially, do you think of the state of Utah as neon?
No. And also, like, I always think of that from the perspective of if you've bought jerseys before and you're like, now I'm just going to stand out as this weird color that doesn't go with the rest of the arena.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why they didn't just make them into the sunset jerseys full time.
That's a great color scheme that looks like the state of Utah.
Yeah. Everyone loves them. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm an advocate for big changes because, like, I think the Nuggets should go from silver to, from gold to silver. I think it would look a lot better with blue and silver. But and it's a little
this
more
is such a transplants take. It's like this is what's funny. These decisions are made by people with no connection to what is the color of the Nuggets uniform? This city jerseys, the same color as the flag, which everybody in Colorado loves.
I just got that. Just got that.
See what I mean? No, but but you're right about the colors because it's weird. Powder blue is not quite a throwback yet. Like, we need another 5-10 years before it feels like a throwback. And so whenever I see a powder blue Nuggets jersey, like at the bar or at the arena, I'm always like, that looks weird.
So do you agree with me in general that we're probably going to see more aggressive ownership in both in the division, given that we're looking at probably three new teams in terms of ownership in the division?
No question. Absolutely no question at all. I mean, you look at Minnesota, they already are being very bold, very aggressive. If you're a critic, as Josh Kroenke is a critic of the Minnesota Timberwolves, you might call them reckless. You might call them desperate. You might say desperate, maybe. But so we'll see if it works out. But there's no question that they are trying to put their stamp. It's funny. I made this comment the other day over at DNVR. When Josh Kroenke said, we are not a startup, in reference to Minnesota, which is a startup, that's both an insult, but it's also an insight into how he views both what Minnesota's doing and what Denver will never do, which is innovate. And sometimes innovation is bad. You reinvent the wheel. Minnesota right now is doing things that are unconventional, like a startup. And if it works, they are a disruptive innovator. Like, oh, they come up with something that works, and now people are either going to have to copy it or deal with it. If it doesn't work, you could be Vivek in Sacramento, where you're like, bro, quit reinventing the wheel. This is clearly not working. So I don't know what Minnesota will or won't be, but the new ownership, there's no question that their style and their fingerprints will be on whatever happens there. I think the more interesting one, perhaps, this Utah one and the Portland one are interesting. Phil Knight's worth $45 million. We're in this new era now. The Broncos have proven just yesterday. We're in this new era where it used to be you'd get a billionaire and they're worth $5 billion and they're going to do this, or there's a group together and they're not actually a billion, but they have a group together. You're starting to get into the group where guys like the Broncos ownership, they went for $4.5 billion. That was we have so much money, we're going to outbid everyone by $1 billion just to make sure this doesn't last long. Like, let's end this on day one of negotiations.
Yeah.
Phil Knight is a similar type where this is not a, hey, let's like, what are the margins? We have to make sure this is like a, hey, I'm just going to, if I want him, I'm going to buy him and I'm going to do the Ballmer thing. Did you see the Bill Simmons clip the other day where apparently the rumor is that Steve Ballmer is building this new facility that says screw revenue. We're not building suites, which is how you make all your money. They're not going to have that.
Yeah. The wall.
We're going to have one section that's basically cheap seats from top to bottom, just so that it creates this giant sound wall that makes the stadium like the loudest in all of the arena, which is only something you do if you don't care about the $1 billion in suite revenue you would make over the course of 10, 15 years. So we're entering this new paradigm with these rich owners that they're not all going to do this, but they're at least capable of doing it. And Phil Knight, connected to sports, I kind of feel like he would be one of the guys that does these types of things.
Yeah, you're not going to hear Steve Ballmer coming in and talk about how much he lost on a team. I'll say that.
It's a hilarious contrast, actually, to say, hey, yeah, we lost 10 figures last year. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to build a stadium that loses money.
Yeah. And look, like, just to be honest, like, and this is the thing is, I said this coming out of the press conference, you could have it one way or the other. No one accuses Steve Ballmer of being cheap.
Nobody. Yep.
Now he also loses money. Right. You get to choose. Yeah, you can have the money and people are going to call you for caring about the money,
right,
or you can lose the money, but everyone's going to be like, you know, who's awesome? That guy. Because all he cares about is making my team awesome. This is a good question, actually, here that I did want to touch on with the Broncos. CJ mentions this. You know, there's some sort of relationship between the Kroenkes and the Waltons. Do y'all think a collaboration is coming as far as stadium faculty upgrades? And where is there enough space to do it? So I think, to explain, Stan Kroenke, owner of the Denver Nuggets, per Josh's very explicit explanation to Ryan. Not explicit, but just clear. Obviously is married into the Walton family. And one of the Waltons, one of the sons of Sam, bought the Broncos. And so now you basically have like all of the Denver teams except the Rockies are now owned in some fashion by, like, are at least influenced by the Walton family of Walmart. I would just say that I would be a little bit surprised for a number of reasons, including internal dynamics. The family operates at on complicated levels. The family dynamics are often complicated, is what I will say. I have a little bit of insight here, as my dad actually worked for Walmart for a period of time, so I have a little bit of insight into the corporate culture. But anyway, I would just say that they're probably going to be very separate entities still. I don't think that they'll necessarily be as adversarial, but I'm not expecting a collaboration in any sense. Are you?
I'm not. They are separate enough that, and also you talk about Stan like owns an NFL team, so they're actually competitors as much as they are like, actually they're more competitors than they are partners because they're competing in the NFL space and they're only partners in where they reside. The one thing I will say is that, you know, there's a big plan right now with River Mile and the adjacent Kroenke property at where Elitch's is that we know is going to be a major redevelopment. There are some talks about whether or not the Broncos would want to tear down and build a new facility and maybe the new modernization of sports arenas, not across the board, but one of the more popular ones is not just to build an arena, but to build an entire city around your arena. And I think that's the Kroenkes' plan, is that they have some big plans to kind of redevelop. The Broncos being right across the highway in a way that can very easily connect more so than it does now. Maybe both of those would come, if not in a partnership, at least looking at the plans of each other and saying, how do we make these puzzle pieces fit together so it feels like one sweeping sports area of downtown? So maybe like slight real estate collaborations, but I don't think it's going to be a thing where it's like, we're going to build this thing together. It's more two people building separately, but playing off of each other.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and I want to talk about free agency. We have a number of things to talk about on that front as far as offseason targets for the Nuggets. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I want to tell you about Bet Online. I've got Celtics -3 tonight. I got that good number of -3 on the Celtics as we record this on Wednesday. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, you know whether I'm an idiot and have lost money or not. I also like the Warriors team total under, and you can do all that and more at Bet Online. Find all the latest sports development news and odds, including the basketball championship matchup, the NHL hockey conference finals, or now the finals. Bet on them, Avs. Go Avs. Major League Baseball, and of course, all the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making us part of your day and your first listen each and every day. Make sure to check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. We haven't gotten into draft a lot. Nuggets held a workout yesterday. Neither Adam and I were able to go because of prior commitments, but we will be at subsequent ones. We'll talk a lot more about the draft later this week. I'm starting to do the dives. It just takes a long time. I'm in the middle of the finals. But if you want to catch up on it right now, go listen to the NBA Big Board. Host Rafael Barlow from the NBA Draft Junkies and author of the Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course the big boards. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, final segment here with Adam Mares on a Wednesday. Let's just start here. I want to just right off the top. You know who the big name is going around the right now? The circles, the league circles, and all the little circles that I check into. There's one name that keeps getting popped out there as far as a possible target that could be on the move, and it's OG Anunoby, your guy, OG Anunoby for the Toronto Raptors. There are a number of things that could happen. Let me throw you a softball here, Mares. Do you think OG Anunoby would be a good fit on the Denver Nuggets?
There's no question. I mean, he's like one of the top guys I would want to take for Denver. I just he's a perfect role player. He can do a bunch of different things, and he guards really well. So there's no question to me he's like a dream fit. And I kind of like him and Aaron Gordon together. Would it work? I think so. Like, you end up getting like a lot of versatility defensively in your forward spot. I think you would match up against all the teams that have good forwards: LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, Luka Doncic. I just think you'd be really well positioned to guard those teams in the playoffs. So no question.
There's I don't have anything solid on why the Raptors are looking to move OG, other than I think they want to improve, and the only way I think that they think they can improve, it's like, you're not going to trade Van Vliet, you're not going to trade Siakam, and you're not going to trade Barnes. And so
he's a piece that's a little redundant with Barnes. Yeah. Barnes, I think, it projects to be the better version of OG because he's a little bit more dynamic and kind of similar bodied. So
There are two different teams that have been mentioned in terms of OG, and you're going to love this. They're both in the Northwest Division. So instead of the Nuggets getting him, I think Portland is on the table for the number seven. I think that's an option. The Blazers are aggressively pursuing the pick, trading the pick. They want to get somebody to help Dame now. And we know that there's already a relationship there. They just traded Norm Powell a couple years ago to Portland. So there's already like an existing thing there. The other option that I think is on the table is, so this is putting the pieces together. Toronto wants a five. They wanted a five at the trade deadline. They checked on all the pieces. There wasn't a deal out there. It's why they went and got Thaddeus Young. Like, they were looking for fives. The problem is they were buying into a heavy market where everybody was looking for centers then.
Yeah.
Which is ironic given our first quarter or first segment discussion. So they couldn't find a deal. Right, but now they're back into it. My understanding is that Toronto is aggressively pursuing a five. Guess who's available? Rudy Gobert. And so, like, there's the idea that it's possible a package could be sent from Toronto, including OG Anunoby, to the Utah Jazz in exchange for Gobert. Now, Gobert's got a pretty healthy market right now. Chicago and our old friend Arturis Karnasovas is interested in Gobert. Atlanta is in on those discussions. Those are the three teams that I've heard most mention of. Atlanta, Chicago, Toronto are the three teams that I've heard most mentioned in relation to Gobert. So the good news is that Rudy Gobert, who, yes, Jokic is cooked, but has also defended Jokic pretty well and is a really great defender, could be gone. The bad news is the Jazz might get better in terms of balancing out their roster and getting more versatile pieces. I guess that's a separate question that I'm kind of interested on. Would you be glad?
Gobert's their best player. Like, Gobert's their best player. So if they lost him for that deal, maybe they eventually arrive at a point where you built properly around OG and Donovan Mitchell. But to me, that would be like, they're probably not a threat next year unless they make some other moves that really make them something interesting.
For sure. So OG is like the type of player. Somebody asked if there's like B and C level versions. Look, the obvious one, if there is one team that I think is like most likely, if there's one trade that I think is most likely to happen for Denver, it's the KCP one. That's just where I'm at, is like, and I don't have like there. I'm not reporting that there have been discussions. It is just based off of my understanding of where the front office is on KCP and based off of my understanding of where the Wizards are in their franchise development. Yeah. I think that is a trade that would probably make sense a lot for both sides.
I think so as well. He is the kind of the caliber of player you might be able to get for a Will Barton, which is, I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily more or less valuable than Will Barton to everyone, but he certainly would be to Denver. I think he would just be a lower usage player, better defender, more of a spot up shooter, less of a dribble drive guy. So he's going to eat fewer possessions, especially when you get Michael Porter back. You don't need those possessions. So to me, I think that sounds like a very realistic sort of option for Denver.
It's interesting because I'll just go ahead and say this. I would rather have KCP than OG. That's me.
Wait, for the same value, or you're saying relative to their contracts and everything?
For the same value.
Insane to me. Because I get it from like a contract and a role. Like, you have to give OG more love, you know, like you kind of have to like cater to him a little bit more. So I could maybe see it if it were, and then obviously price adjusting for that. But OG is like, OG is actually going to make a defensive impact on an elite player in a playoffs. I think KCP will like make things slightly harder for a Damian Lillard, but I don't think he's going to stop him.
I don't think OG. I think if you go back and you watch this year, you're going to find, like, if you really went back and you watch all those Raptors games, you find that, like, OG is not as good as he used to be. He just isn't. He's stagnated a little bit. And I think that I really do think that he's skating by on reputation from the 2019 run and the 2020 run. I just don't think he's the same guy. He was good then, but I don't know. I am not of the mindset that OG is like an elite level guy on any level. And really offensively, he struggled this year. And it makes sense that there's this conversation about him wanting more touches and wanting to be a higher role in the offense when it's like, yeah, because you weren't emphasized because they had better options. Like there's a relationship here between the Raptors went other places to score because they had better options. So that would be also concern me. I would be worried for the Denver Nuggets about like that. I mean, that's one of the good things with KCP is KCP is like, no, I'm good. I'll defend and I'll shoot and I'm fine. Like there's no indication that KCP really wants like a larger role.
Somebody here says OG isn't stopping anyone that Gordon isn't stopping. Agreed. But guess what? It's nice to have multiple of them. I mean, look at the Boston Celtics. They have like two of every, they have two centers. They have two wings. They have two guard defenders. Like they have two at every spot there. And it, part of what makes them so great defensively.
I don't know necessarily why I will say this name keeps popping up. Anto mentions it in the chat, but like a lot of people have mentioned this, like with Lu Dort. I'll tell you based off of like my understanding of OKC, you're not getting Dort.
So they're not, it's interesting to me that you wouldn't just because it feels like it's time to, the future for them seems more like it's Shea and Giddey than it is Dort and either of those two guys.
I think from their perspective, if they're going to make a deal, it's going to be for draft equity. I don't think it's like they're building around Lu Dort. I think it's more of
that's
just
the one
like
thing they don't have is draft equity. So yeah, makes sense.
That's how they look at it. I think I just find it unlikely that they're going to like just let Dort walk.
Well, they're not going to let him. I don't think they're going to let him walk. I wouldn't be surprised if he was traded, but I agree with you that the price for a Lu Dort is pretty steep. Like that's, yeah, and on top of that, you have to be ready to pay for him in the future.
That's what I mean. I should specify the you there when I say you're not getting Lu Dort. It's not that anybody's not getting Lu Dort. It's that I don't think the Denver Nuggets are going to be able to put together an offer that's valuable enough for Dort.
You're involving painful pieces there to get Lu Dort. Like Lu Dort is sort of your Drew Holiday move where you're like, okay, this is it. We're going all in. And I don't know if he should be your Drew Holiday move.
Someone else mentioned this and I wanted to address it. Odds that the Nuggets can get Gary Payton II in free agency. So if you're asking me about like what's the perfect guy, it is GP2. Like if there was anybody the Nuggets could get, it would be GP2.
He's pretty old. Like he has 1 year basically under his belt where he's been here. Cause I love him. I'm a big fan of his. How old is he right now? Do you know? I'm trying to look it up.
You can just Google Gary Payton age. And I found that Google is very good with this. Nope. I'm sorry. Gary Payton age is 53 years.
I know. That's what I just did too. He's 29 years old. Gary Payton is. So, I mean, like he's not like young. He might be, I do wonder, and I love him. I think he's the A version of this mold. I wonder if he is a bit of a Torrey Craig type where it's like, he's really good, but can we get GP1? Yeah. I get the club. So I don't know, but nonetheless, like somebody was asking, I do think that there is something to the Nuggets where this offseason is simple in terms of knowing what you need to do. I think it's difficult in pulling it off, but it's simple in that like, we're not looking at guys and their skill set in this complex, nuanced way, right, Matt? Like, we're not sitting here debating the merits of KCP and Gary Payton. We're just knowing they have length, they play very good defense, like that's what, and they play the position of need. And yeah. I think that's where Denver's probably at this offseason is they can cull their list down to where they're not actually getting distracted by all these shiny things around and like, oh, what about this backup center? That would be fun. I think they kind of know we really got to find some defense and length at the 2-3 and maybe both. And in doing that, you can get your list very simple. You can allocate all your resources there and then the other pieces get filled in.
Yeah, it's I think the best way to describe it is there is kind of an understanding of like Will Barton's offense was, you know, by the numbers, it was pretty good this year, but the idea is like Will Barton's offense was pretty good overall, even if it was frustrating. Like the numbers were pretty good, but he's not good enough on offense for the money he's making. So now it's like, how do you take that salary and have Will pretty good offense and better defense? Right. And if you can upgrade those things, then I think that that's where they want to go. We'll talk more about free agency this week as well as the NBA draft. We'll have more for you on that on Locked On Nuggets. I want to thank you for joining us today. Make sure to give us 5-star reviews. Make sure to give us, check us out on YouTube and subscribe. It helps us out so much. It's the best way for you to support the show. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. For Adam Mares, I'm Matt Moore. Thanks for joining us on Locked On Nuggets. Go Avs.